This is the start of the July 30th, 1986 interview with Camilla Mickey McCrae of 5126 Attleboro Street, Jacksonville, Florida. The interviewer is David Taylor, and the interview is done in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project.
What's today's date?
The 29th. Wednesday the 29th.
Okay, I just did that to see how it sounded there.
How do we sound?
That sounds good to me.
I can't hear it. That did come back.
No, it's all recorded inside there.
You're not recording my, clearing my throat, I hope.
Well, that's on there, but I wouldn't worry about
it. Oh, is it? Not now.
No, I got it down there.
That's aggravating. I'm going to get a drink of water.
Okay, careful now, because your foot's all right. Now, this is something that you wrote for me earlier today?
Yes.
Okay, let's hear what it says.
My life at St. Charles Creek. Daddy bought 10 acres on St. Charles Creek, known as San Carlos today, that runs into the St. John's River. He bought this land from a Mr. Harrell. Actually, it was a swap of more acres on the old Adams place, for the old Adams place was so low and water stood on the ground, and St. Charles was high and healthier for him to raise his family. We moved there in January of 1920, Robert Lee Brooks and his wife, Rosa Lee, and one son and five daughters. I was the youngest. We lived there for 5.5 years, moving back to town, Jacksonville, in the summer of 1925, so we could start school in the fall. Some of the people that lived near us were Tinker Roberts and his brother Dick. Dick's wife, Ethel, lived, and they all lived with the men's widowed mother on what was known as the Roberts Island. They lived between our place and the small town of New Berlin.
Oh, don't worry about that.
Okay. New Berlin was mostly owned by N.B. Kemp family. N.B. Kemp was the father, and his name was Napoleon Broward Kemp, after his kin that had been a former governor of Florida, and his wife and children, the oldest being N.B. Jr. and Blanche, the daughter, and the youngest son, William, was called Billy Mack by his friends. They were very nice people, lending a hand to help people wherever needed. There were at least two boats that carried mail and passengers up the St. John's River from New Berlin to Jacksonville. The ones we remembered were named the Merrimack and the Monitor. I went into town on these boats several times with my mother. On our way, we would stop at Brooks Scanlon Docks, near where the paper mill is now on Heckscher Drive. The old pilings are still visible. Then on to dock in Jacksonville. They would dock at the end of Laura and Hogan Street. Then the water was only about a block from West Bay Street. There were lots of docks for small boats, not a very clean place for fishermen. Docked there and threw away their catch they couldn't sell. And some old boats and rowboats were sunken there, and it was sort of messy. It was a busy block of more docks and boats and people moving back and forth. West Bay Street had hotels of that era that opened right from the street. One could see the rich red carpeting and palms that made the foyer and entrance so elegant, especially to a country child like I was. There were dime stores along the street, and Mama would take me in them, but I wasn't allowed to touch anything. Before 1920, a cutoff had been dredged in the St. John's River to shorten the route the big ships could take into the city of Jacksonville. This cut off the curve in the river. This was called the Fulton Cutoff. The sand that was dredged from the river bottom was snow white and clean. It made an island in the river. Then this island was called Goat Island, and I believe only goats lived on it, although my sister said the Lucas family lived there also. Several times a year, my sisters and brother and I would row over in our rowboat and fill washtubs with this clean white sand. When it was brought home, it was spread on our boarded kitchen floor, and after walking on it several days, it was swept off. This left the boards clean and grease-free. Mm-hmm. It was fun to play with the goats, too. My oldest sisters, four, and brother, the oldest of us all, would row the rowboat each school day down the St. Charles Creek, we called it that, into the St. John's River, and on south down to New Berlin. There they'd beach the boat and walk into the woods to the one-room schoolhouse. There was no life vest, no motor on the boat. Only their skills and prayers kept them safe. The school yard was divided. One side was for the girls and one side for the boys, and they weren't allowed to play together. Every grade through eight were taught. It was very tiring for the little ones when the teacher took up time with the older children. My sister Alice, next to me, would get so sleepy. One day she just put her head on her desk and was tapped on the head by the teacher with a pointer she had made from a palmetto frond. Another time the teacher asked the children who could bring in rags to wash the blackboards. Alice embarrassed her brother and sisters by holding up her hand and saying she could bring him some rags, for Mama said that was all that we had was rags. When we moved to St. Charles, the water was clean and clear. There were fish any time one wanted to fish, shrimp in season, large crabs all the time. Daddy and Mama knew where and when to catch any of the fish in the creek and always used a cane pole. Daddy wove or knitted his shrimp nets and showed me how to make them. He carved his shuttle that he used to make them from a bone. He also showed me how to throw the nets. I had just turned three the month before we made the move to St. Charles. It wasn't long before I could swim all over the creek, which was wide, maybe 150 feet across.
That's very nice.
That's all the further I got.
Okay. Now, what were your parents' names again?
Robert Lee and Rosa Lee Brooks.
Okay. And you had how many brothers and sisters?
I had one brother, and his name was Lockwood. And then I had four sisters, and Lockwood was the oldest child, and then Ethel, and Edith, and Lola, and Alice, and I was the youngest, and my name was Camillus.
When were you born? What's your
birthday? I was born in December of 1916, and so I had just turned three in 1919 of December, and in January of 1920 is when we moved down there, and I can remember moving day real plain. Mm. I can remember why we moved. When we lived on this old Adams place that we moved from, it rained a lot, and the water was everywhere. Even in the horse stalls, as far as you could see, it was like living in a lake, and it was very unhealthy. So this friend of Daddy's, Mr. Harrell, had this property down on St. Charles Lake, and it was only 10 acres, but Daddy's property had quite a bit more acreage. But he said that he would swap it with Daddy for them to go down there and look. And, of course, it was more expensive property, even though it had less acres, because it was high and dry and beautiful property on that creek. And the creek went on up past our house, way and wound way back up in there, and it was marsh on both sides. And, of course, it got smaller the further it went back in there. And way up in there was a high hill that we called Clay Hill, and we could walk through the woods. We couldn't walk down on the shore because it got wet and marshy, but we could walk through the woods up in there, and that was their favorite place for me to play on that clay hill and for the rest of them to fish. That it was a good fishing hole there. But between us on the water in Clay Hill was some alligators, so we didn't go up on the water that much.
Now, you lived at Lake Charles and you moved to St. Charles? Where is St. Charles Lake? I don't think I'm familiar with that.
There's not a St. Charles Lake. It's a St. Charles Creek. Uh-huh. And it's San Carlos Creek. I think it's the first creek as you go out Heckscher Drive is Dunn's Creek.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, the second one, I believe, is San Carlos. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And back up to the left as you go, you'll see where the new light plant is situated and the big drums and and everything that's attached goes part of that light plant.
Right,
is sitting where our old home place and the landing and all used to be that we fish from.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, there was nothing, Heckshire Drive. The only way you could get down to it other than in a boat was to go out North Main Street, way out that way, and come through. Only part, just a small part of it was paved. Most of it was deep sand ruts. If you ever got in it, you had to follow where you went, and there's no way to get out of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's where you moved from?
No, where we moved from that I called Old Adams Place that was so sandy, it was way out Lem Turner Road.
Oh, yeah.
Way out Lem Turner, or it seemed way out to me then, mm-hmm. because I was so small. But we moved from that to St. Charles Creek. But there was no St. Charles Lake. And I think it's remarkable that we lived there for 5 years with 6 children and never one time had a doctor.
Hmm.
Think of that today, how much money people pour into doctor's offices and doctor's care for one child, much less 5 children, for 5 years.
So were you born at home then?
I was born back in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was born at home in Jacksonville. In December of 1916, it was on Phyllis Street. You know where the old water tower is? They just took down only half a block from there was Phyllis Street.
Okay.
But they put I-10 through there, and that took Phyllis Street. But it was right through in that area where I was born. I have a picture of the old home place. I was fortunate enough to think to go take a picture of it before it was torn down.
Well, that's a nice thing to have.
Yeah, just... for keepsake, to have in your book of remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
We in our church are told to keep a family record, personal record, and a book of remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not very up on it, but I do write a little bit, kind of keep, maybe once a year I'll put down the most important event, if we have a new grandchild, something real important, what we got for Christmas or something.
Mm-hmm. You were mentioning that your father did some tramping and fishing on the river. Was that his main source of income at the time?
No, it wasn't his source of income at all, mm-hmm. but it was our source of food a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But Daddy, it was real fertile ground, and he had a garden. He always had a garden. He loved to grow things. He was a farmer at heart because that's what he had always done up to this time. But at this, most of this time, the 5 years that we lived there, he came into town on Monday morning, and he worked a job in Jacksonville,
mm-hmm.
and would stay with his sister through the week and then would come home on the weekend. And through the week, us children and my mother would, I didn't do much because I was too little, but they would take care of the garden. And we had fruit trees.
Mm.
We had what they call bittersweet oranges that made wonderful orange marmalade. And in the fall, all sorts of grapes, big bullet grapes and the grapevines. And we climbed the trees to get nuts and grapes and chinkapins and the things that grew in the trees and the fruits that grew wild in the trees. So we were all like a bunch of monkeys. It never occurred to us. We had some friends that came, and one of them that was 10 years older than I was fell out of the tree one day. And it was a low limb, and I thought she was just foolish to fall out of a tree. Why would anybody fall out of a tree? And I remember she was quite a ways from home. We were all with her. But she ran all the way home saying, oh, my jawbone's broken. And I didn't have any sympathy for her. I was small and didn't realize she could have hurt herself, you know.
Yeah.
But I just thought she was really a foolish girl to fall out of a low-limb tree. Anybody could hold on to a low-limb tree. But we had lived there so long and had done that so much that it was just second nature for us to climb trees and
mm-hmm.
gather grapes and the other things that, fruit and things that we like to have.
Now, what's a chinkapin? I've never heard that word before.
You've never heard of chinkapin?
No.
A chinkapin is a nut. And on the tree, it's in a real prickly covering, outer covering, and it'll stick you.
Yeah.
But if you can ever get that sticky old covering out, then it's just really black. I don't know if you've ever heard the expression black as a chinkapin, but then it has a real black covering, and it is not real hard. And then you get that covering off, and the nut meat is inside, and it's about the size of what is that nut that's small and round like that?
Hazelnut?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But it's very delicious. And I wouldn't recognize a chinkapin tree now, but my older sisters would. Hmm. But they were delicious. And then we had...
what happened to the chinkapin trees is they've got a disease on and they've all been...
Oh, yeah.
Hardly ever see one.
Yeah.
It used to be all around in vacant lots.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not familiar with that at all.
Then we had, what is that nut, Reg, that's like a walnut, only hard? A hickory nut. You've heard of that, haven't
mm-hmm,
you?
Sure.
Well, that was the main nut, I guess, that we had. And we had an awful time getting nut meat out of the hickory nut because it's hard, really hard nut to crack. And we'd have to get an old brick out from under the house. Our house was way up on bricks.
Yeah.
And we'd have to get out one of those bricks and lay it down and put the nut on it and then hit it with the other brick. Well, if it broke the nut, we were lucky, but the old bricks would all break up and the red would crumble all in the nut meat, and we'd have a time separating that old red crumb from the brick out of the nut meat. But sometimes we'd get enough to put in candy. Mm-hmm. That Mama would make us candy and put that nut meat in. Sometimes my sister and I would crawl up under the house and get that soft red off those bricks and put it on our faces, you know, and put it on our lips. I didn't even know what I was doing, but she'd show me how. She knew what we were doing. And we'd come out all dressed, you know, looking like clowns, I'm sure. But we had to wash it off or Daddy came home because he wouldn't let us put that on our face. But it was just fun. And we played store a lot, and we had a lot of oranges, like I said, and we'd peel the orange peeling from the top to the bottom without breaking the peeling and hang them up and let them dry. That would be part of the things that we'd sell in the store. Or once in a while, we had a peddler that would come in and would sell other fruit, and so Mama would buy us other fruit when he'd come. Mm-hmm. But he didn't come often, I don't think. I can't remember him coming at a regular time. Mm-hmm. But we were crazy about things that you could buy in a store because we didn't have access to a store or candy. So if we got a can of Ritter beans, which we know is pork and beans today, but they were called Ritters then, we thought that was really almost as good as candy because what we had to eat was fish or seafood of some kind, which really gets old. I don't care how fresh it is. It gets old when that's about it.
Yeah.
Or else what was in Daddy's garden, you know.
Can't get
her
to eat fish today.
Is that so? You don't like fish at all?
I like fish if it's fresh. I do not eat any frozen fish.
Like, shrimp.
We had to eat so much of it when I was little. And a lot of times we'd have cornbread and fried fish and fish gravy, and that would be our supper. And I just, you know, a lot of that goes a long way.
Yeah.
A little goes a long way. I didn't like it.
Mark, well, all her sisters, her cavities, she doesn't have one of her sisters had something happen to one or two, three of her teeth for the rest of all that. Her sister's almost 80 years old, she's still there.
Wow, that's great.
Well, my mother did too. She was 93 almost, just a few months when she died.
Yeah.
And she had her teeth. And my dad too. But
I was born in Georgia and lost all mine.
Must be the water up there or something.
I don't know.
We just had that creek. Well, we had wells. I don't say it was creek water that we drank, but we had wells.
Yeah.
We had wild animals around our place because we had a cleared space, but then back of our house was a large, what we called a hammock. And there would be wildcats in there, and a panther, I think they found a panther in there. I mentioned to him about the Indian mound, how would we come?
We'd come back, let's go way out and use ocean way.
The ocean way.
And come in that way and on a dirt road, practically all the way in there.
If you could get in that property now, I guess it was a New Berlin Road that we probably came in that crosses on over Heckscher Drive now. But and it might have been called that then, I can't remember, but like I say, it was just a dirt road then, and we'd cut off and go down in there. And even after these people bought it from my dad, we could still go back down in there and fish and have our picnics and things. And as you would go down into the property, before it got to the hammock that my daddy owned, he didn't own land out of the hammock, but that was included in his 10 acres. But where, out in what at that time was open fields, like, on the right as you went down was a large mound, and they said it was an Indian mound. See, when we moved in there in 1920, it was very prominent. You could really see it as we'd go back and forth. You could really spot it. It was about maybe 75 feet from the road. Wasn't very far from the road, and it was easy to spot. But now whether it's there or not, but I think it would be nice for someone that knows about those things, excavating and exploring those things, to see if it's still down there. I don't know who owned the land, if they could get permission or not. But it would. They might find all sorts of things in that area if they could go down there and look.
What was it about it that made you recognize it as an Indian mound?
Nothing except we were told that.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know who told us that, but someone told our family that that was an Indian mound, someone that was acquainted with the property and knew about the property before we. It just sort of word of mouth. Mm-hmm. But it would have to be something man-made because the rest of the land was very flat. There
right.
was no,
okay.
no in, you know, even a little bit of hills or inclines or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just really flat woods out there, and that's
right.
about it.
Yeah.
So this mound, I would say, would be about 25 feet by 25 feet, maybe went up 25 feet. So it wasn't just a really small thing at that time.
Yeah.
But it seemed like the last time we went by, it had gone down quite a bit now. I don't know if it's weather and rain and all had blown it down a lot. But it just didn't seem as prominent. Or maybe it's because I was grown where as a child it seemed more prominent. I really don't know.
I'm just trying to visualize in my head where your home was out there. In relationship to New Berlin, would it be east of New Berlin or closer to town?
Oh, dear.
Closer to the sea or closer to town?
New Berlin was right on the river,
yeah.
St. John's River. Well, we were up the creek. The creek turns and goes to the left. As you go over Heckscher Drive,
right.
The creek runs off up to the left. And those buildings that you see now and all is up to the left. So we had to come up out of the creek to get into St. John's River and then go on to the right down to get to New Berlin.
Okay.
Because on up that way, the river heads toward the ocean.
Right.
When I say east, when the river flows north and flows on out sort of east up at that point to get to the ocean. But St. Charles Creek, it would bear off to the left to go up into that. And it was quite wide,
yeah.
quite a nice-sized creek up in there.
Mm-hmm. I know where you mean that.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the plants that you grew in your garden then?
Well, my mother had beautiful flowers, but they were flowers that would grow in that vicinity. She had what she called ragged sailors and periwinkles and morning glories, and she had roses too. And a lot of flowers that were easy to grow and would, I guess, I don't know if they were annuals or what, but anyway, she didn't have any trouble growing them. But the vegetables that my dad grew, I remember we had a sort of a low place in the vegetable garden, and down there he had beets and carrots, and they grew well down there. But he had, he loved to plant peas and corn and okra, tomatoes, and turnips and radishes, and we were allowed to go out and pick and eat whatever we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
If any tomatoes were on the bushes, we were allowed to go eat them, and he even grew watermelons and cantaloupes, and the ground would just really produce back then. It was like virgin soil.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing had ever been grown on it, I suppose. Now, there were people that were living in the house when we moved there. A family hadn't moved out. We moved there like Monday or Tuesday of the week. And I remember I was just so indignant that those people hadn't moved out of our house when we moved in. And they had a little girl about my size, and I just didn't like her, childlike. I don't know why I didn't like her. and the man had not mowed the lawn or the yard. Of course, there wasn't any such thing as a mowing machine, but he hadn't cut it, you know, with his scythe or sling or something. And I remember that the grass grew up as far as the window ledges, and that was terrible because my dad was the kind that kept all weeds out. He didn't allow weeds in his garden or yard or anything. He was very meticulous like that. And I just thought they were really sorry to have weeds all in that yard, especially high as the windows. But by the end of the week, they moved out. And so we had the house to ourselves, and Dad fixed it up like he wanted to. And I remember one night there, at one end of the house was my sister's, our room, the girls' room. All five of us stayed in the room. There was two beds. My older sister and I slept, and we had one bed, and the other three girls slept in another bed. You might not want to take this,
oh,
do
this
you?
Oh, this is fine. I'm most interested in this. Yeah.
Well, the living room in my mother's room was at the front, my mother and dad's room. And then there was a porch that connected our room at this end of the house with my brother's room at that end of the house. The old back porch open. Mm-hmm. And there was a shelf there, and we had a water bucket and a dipper. And that's where Daddy kept fresh water there, or we did, or somebody kept fresh water in that bucket. And so if we wanted water, day or night, we'd go there and dip fresh water. Because we didn't have running water. And we had to get water from a well and from the pump. So this particular night, I was four maybe, or five, I got up and ran outside to get me a drink of water. And I got that dipper up and happened to look, and no further from me, I'll say 10 feet, was a black man standing there. And I had never seen black people because I was raised out in the country by myself, and we had no occasion to be around black people. And of course, the fact that he was there, black or white, I guess, I never before or since, I hope ever, be that frightened again. It just really just tore me up. So I put it down, the dipper, ran back in the bedroom, and all we had for a lock was a wicker clothes basket full of our sorrel clothes. I pushed that against the door like that would do a lot, but in my childish mind, that locked the door. So I hopped in bed with my sister, and I woke her up. And she was like my mother, because she was 10 years older than I was. And so I told her, whispered, what I had seen. Well, she wanted to just get up and go call Daddy and let him go see what was all about. But, oh, I was too frightened. I would not let her get out of that bed. So we stayed there all night, wide awake the rest of the night, because I wouldn't let her get out of the bed. So the next day, of course, she told Daddy, and there was footprints out there. But the man left, and nothing was taken. But it frightened me, so I wouldn't even go in the yard to play in the daytime then for quite a while. I wouldn't get away from my mother. I just was afraid if I got out there, he'd grab me, I guess. But I can remember that fright. It was terrible to be that frightened. But I got over it. But it was sure bad at the time. But
did you tell him that y'all did have alligators out there?
Yes, we had a dog named Trouble that we just all loved. And we heard him barking way down through the marsh. And pretty soon, it wasn't yelp, and that was it. And we never did see Trouble again. And we just know that an alligator got him. He just kept yelping till that alligator got close enough that he could either slap him with his tail. You know, that's their main weapon, is those tails. They can just really knock anybody, almost anything over with those tails. And then when they do that, they just grab them. So I suppose that's what happened to Trouble.
Even when we went out there later in the years, we seen alligators out there.
So did people hunt alligators? Did your dad?
No.
Or other animals that lived in the woods?
My brother did, yes. And we had, he went out hunting one day and he found two little squirrels. I'm sorry, not squirrels, coons.
Yeah.
That we don't ever know what happened to the mother, but they had fallen out of their nest, so he brought them home. And we named one of them Hannah, and the female. And I can't remember what we named the boy. But he didn't live very long. But Hannah was our pet. Daddy made us a wire cage for Hannah, and she stayed outside, and we fed her. We could take her out of the cage, and she'd walk across our shoulders and play with her, and we just thought she was wonderful. And she just got so old one day he finally let her go and go back in the woods. But we had her for a long, long time. Another thing we had was baby alligator pets.
Wow.
And they have an odor. If you've ever been around a baby alligator pen, you'll know it forever. I remember when we used to go on Bay Street, then they could sell baby alligators, and they would have them in little pens, and that same odor would be up and down Bay Street, because they had a lot of curio shops up and down Bay Street at that time. I tell you, if you want to see what Bay Street looked at that time, in front of the elevator at St. Vincent's Hospital, they've got some old pictures, and I don't know if they're Jacksonville or not, but one of them really looks the way I remember that waterfront on Bay Street.
End of side one. Interview continued on side two. Side two of the first tape of the July 30th, 1986 interview with Camilla Mickey McRae.
Did you raise in Joshua?
No, I grew up way up in Maine, but I've lived here for about 2 years now.
About 2 years?
Yeah, maybe a little more.
Well, this thing around has new to you, then.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
One time my sister, two older sisters were out in the boat, and they'd pulled up into some marshy area, and they saw an alligator bed where the little gators had just come out of the eggs.
Yeah.
And so they scooped them up and put them in the boat and came back home. And when Mama and Daddy saw what they had done, they were really mad with them. They told them that that mother gator could have turned that boat over if she'd known that they had her babies in that boat with her tail. She could just flip that rowboat because it's just a small rowboat. So they were warned never, ever to steal babies from a nest of any kind of game. So they didn't do that again because they really put fear of that gator in them, so they didn't want her after them.
Yeah.
But my brother was a real game hunter, and one time he and Daddy shot a gator, I don't know how many times, and my mother cooked a small portion of the tail, and they all ate it, but because she wouldn't eat it, I wouldn't taste it. I wouldn't eat anything my mother wouldn't eat. One time we were fishing and a crab, I was small, and he bit into my finger. And, oh, I was screaming. It hurt. And I was screaming, dancing around and screaming. So my daddy came, and he just jerked the crab off. Well, it jerked the claw out of the crab, and it still hung on my finger. So I was still screaming. So he had to go to his toolbox and get the pliers to ply open that claw before it ever turned loose on my finger.
Mm.
Isn't that something?
It must have been pretty scary, too.
It was, but it hurt worse, and it was scary.
Yeah.
Speaking about her mother and her, she had some peculiarities. She wouldn't eat a fish, like a, what we call a flounder.
Yeah.
Because both his eyes is on the same side.
Right, right.
She wouldn't eat a fish, a flounder. She wouldn't eat a
croaker.
Sheep head, because he got teeth in his mouth. And she wouldn't eat a croaker, because he made a human sound.
Oh, yeah.
Her mother had a lot of peculiarities, so she followed along.
Well, there was plenty of good things to eat. You didn't have to eat all those peculiar-sounding looking things.
What were some of the other fish and shellfish that came out of the river that you might have had?
Well, one time we had what we call, it's a manatee. You know, those manatee, those big old fish. We call them sea cows.
Right.
And they came up the river. And quite often we would see large animals that would come, you know, large fish that would come up the river like that.
That's before all this pollution.
Oh, yeah. Way back then the water was so clear you could see your hand in it. And we all were real good swimmers because we didn't have anything to do but swim. Of course, the little ones were not allowed in the water unless my mother was down there or some of the older ones were down there. Even though we could swim, she didn't let us go in without supervision. But we could and rowed the boat. We didn't think anything of going up and down that creek in the boat and fishing whenever we wanted to. I didn't like to fish a lot because I never developed that much patience. But my daddy was a wonderful fisherman, and he never fished with anything but a cane pole. But I have actually known him to sit from breakfast to lunch without a bite in one spot, go in and get lunch, go back and sit on that one spot because they didn't feed that morning, bite that morning. They were going to bite that afternoon, and he'd sit there till the mosquitoes drove him in that night fishing because he knew where they were biting. And we had a lot of red bass, those big red bass with a black spot on the tail. Mm-hmm. And trout, we had a lot of trout. And shiners, they were little fish that would shine. We had those and yellowtails and drums. They were kind of a, almost a round fish with a sort of a black and white or gray and white stripe on them. Mm-hmm. Can you think of any more fish that we had, Reg? And the crabs, oh, they were our, we love crabs. And to this day, we love crabs.
Yeah.
They generally use them for bait for larger fish.
The shiners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the crabs, they were just so many and so prolific that we didn't have any trouble getting crabs, all the crabs we wanted.
How did you catch them?
Well, you chop off, like he says, a piece of another fish, or if you happen to have meat, you know, scraps, mm-hmm. or old bone or something, you tied it on the end of a string, and maybe with a, if it wasn't a bone heavy enough to take it in the water, you'd have to put a oyster shell or something to make it heavy enough to go down in the water, and the other end tie around the dock, you know, the stop on the dock or something, or on the boat or something. And then you had a crab net. Have you ever seen a crab net? It's a
short,
round thing.
Mm-hmm, with a net on it.
Yeah.
On a pole. And you'd slip that on, you'd pull it up. One person usually would pull up the net real easy, and you could see him way down in the water.
See the crab come there and eat. Mm-hmm.
And he'd hang on.
He'd pull him on up to the water, sir, and he'd run that net on.
So that bait would be right in the middle of the net? Was that what you tried?
Yeah.
No. The bait would be on the string.
Yeah.
And he'd go to nibbling on it down there, and then you'd pull it up. And he wouldn't turn loose. And when he got up where you could see at the top of the water, then he slipped.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now they have, the commercial fishermen have crab traps. Mm-hmm. That they come in those boxes that they put, they bait in, the crab comes in some way, then they can't get out. But we didn't have that. We just put it on a string and would throw it in. And if there was any bait left, we'd throw it right back in. If they didn't, we'd tie a new piece of meat on there and throw it back in. They love that.
Half a dozen or more crabs off of one bait. So it didn't have a hook or nothing on it. Yeah. He'd just come there and go to chewing on it, and you pull it away, he'd just stay with it.
If he saw you, he'd run off.
Yeah.
You had to pull it up very carefully, not let him see you, or jerk it to where he knew somebody was on there.
Right.
But you could fool him if you'd bring it up real easy. And the way that we cooked them, the way they're supposed to be cooked, you know, you had to put them alive in boiling water. You can't cook them if they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you clean them, you have to start at their belly and pull off, there's a little point on the shell, and you had to pull all that off. And wash, throw away all that shell, top shell, and all that yellow stuff, and those little fangs, all that's poison. We never ate any of that. All we ate was the white meat that was at the end of the claws and the big claws in the front.
Mm-hmm.
We'd shell them, that's the dark meat, and then all that white meat. And it's real delicate to cut a shell out that white meat because you can't tell the meat from the shells. And if you're not real careful, you'll have as much shell in that meat as you do meat. And the patties don't turn out very good, but, oh, they are wonderful, I tell you, fresh.
She used to be real good at it. Years ago, I used to go flounder fishing with a light and a spear.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, "We seen a crab tonight." I'd go out there in that same area. "Bring me some crabs." So I brought a croaker sack full of crabs that night. She had to work all day long picking them crabs, and she never asked for no more.
Well, I didn't mind picking a few, but that's just too many, that many.
What did you make
for
crab meat?
Oh, you can make crab salad, because see, the meat is boiled and cooked when you take it out.
Devil crab.
And you make devil crab patties. You could make a crab salad, and that's delicious. Or else you could mix, we never believed in making and putting onions in any seafood because it takes away from the rich flavor of the seafood.
Mm-hmm.
So we just put a little meal in it and salt, And I can't remember just what you do put in them. Can you? It's been so long since I made one. Make it up into, you had to put a little meal or something that would hold the meat together so you could fry it. A little bit of hot pepper in it is good. Not too much, but just a little bit to season it. And then you fry it in not really deep fat, but just fry it in hot fat. And turn it, and by the time the bottom's brown, you turn it, the top's brown, the meat's already done. You do beat up egg, and that holds it together and gives it flavor. And then meal. And that makes a delicious dish. But then I never did bake them. A lot of people bake, pack them back in shells and bake them. I never did do that because I like the fried patties or I like the salad. A lot of people put onions in their salad, but like I say, we don't put onions in good fresh seafood like that because we just think it takes away from it. So we just use eggs. We'd use boiled eggs in our salad and maybe a little pickle. A pickle relish with a little mayonnaise and salt and pepper, and that would make a delicious salad, like a chicken salad, only it'd be the crab meat salad. And if you sometimes you can pull out the crab meat where it's great big pieces like this, you know, and oh, it's so good when it's in those great big chunks like that. And the dark meat is a little on the watery side. And I think that's why it's not as good, but the white meat is delicious.
Well, the legs,
claws.
Lobster,
sure.
Yeah. Well, it's some of that stuff is smaller. Mm-hmm.
The if you want to mix the dark and the light, that's good for a fried patty. But I never put the dark in a salad. The salad is just too good to mess up with the dark meat.
Were there many men or women who lived near you then who made their living from fishing?
Well, now, I understood these Roberts that I told you, Tinker Roberts and his brother Dick Roberts, did their living that way. They made their living that way. And now the Kemps that practically owned New Berlin, they had a store, and they had, I believe at that time, even a little hotel there, and they, of course, their own nice big home, and I don't, I'm sure they had docks there where shrimp boats and fish boats came in, and they probably sold, and I'm sure they must have sold it there in their store, but I was so small that I didn't buy anything, you know, so I'm not sure about that, but I'm, they must have, they were the only store around there at all.
That wasn't too far from Dane's Point, as you know it now.
Yeah, Dames Point was right along there.
All that was fishing. What I remember about it, where the shrimp boats all come in and dock there a whole lot.
Yeah.
Out of Dames Point and New Berlin too, I guess.
Yeah. But,
the river.
And they did come for years right downtown where the Main Street Bridge is, just to the left, just east of it. There used to be shrimp boats in there and fishing boats in that area all the time, but they finally. You see what they've done to it now, made a river, you know, they bulkheaded the river up, put the parking lots and all in. There used to be docks out there for fishing boats, shrimp boats.
When I was small, I don't know just when this happened, but this is what I call the Fulton Cutoff. See, they just made the river kind of like this, and this was kind of islands in here, and I think all in here and everything, and this is originally had how boats had to come to go on out to sea.
The northerly channel there, I guess.
Yeah, but see, they cut this channel through here. This is and this is called the Fulton Cutoff through in here. I don't know if it is now, but it's when I was young, it was.
Blount Island now.
That would be south of Blount Island.
I don't know if it's south or if Blount Island's over here or up in here. I just really don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, they made this cutoff, and that's where they made that channel real deep for ocean-going boats to come in. And this, is see, down here is Jacksonville. And along here somewhere, I'm not sure, is New Berlin. Now, I don't know if it's up in this part or down in that part. But along the river in here is New Berlin. And I don't even know in connection with that where St. Charles Creek was, but I do know this is what the Fulton Cutoff was, and the channel was made deep enough for ocean-going vessels, And this had to be before 1920. I'm not sure when this happened. Maybe old newspapers would tell you when this happened. But they did make this island from the sand they dredged up from the river bottom. And it was pure white sand, just like your paper there. It's beautiful. Well, it's pretty like, oh, you know, the sand on the ocean.
Yeah.
Beach.
What kind of games did you play with your brothers and sisters when you were living out there? Do you remember any of them?
Well, we had to play, if we got a ball, we'd play dodgeball, and we'd play Red Rover, let me come over, you know, you've heard of that. And, of course, we played tag and hide and seek like most children play, but we loved to play jacks. So if we ever went to town, we tried to get Mama to get us a ball and some jacks. That was one of our favorite games, to play jacks. And, of course, we always had some type of rope we could play a jump rope with. We could play double jump ropes and jump from both sides. Have you ever seen that?
Mm-hmm.
And we never had any trouble going in or going out. We, you know, you just, as kids, we just did it all the time and knew how to do it. And we didn't have skates, though, until we came back to town. There was no place to skate out there because everything was sand.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing paved. We didn't have any skates. But we took up most of our time really swimming. We loved to be in that water when the weather was warm, and most of the time it was warm. I can't even remember it being cold down there. But at night, we were near enough the water that we could see the boats, the big boats that were lit up, that would come in, and they would, oh, we could just imagine all the faraway places those boats had been and wish we were on those boats because the lights were just beautiful, reflecting on the water from the boats. We couldn't see the boats so plain, but we could see the lights and some of the reflection on the water.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was little, I'd say, Mama, is it going ish away or ish away? And she didn't know. I couldn't talk real plain, and that's what I'd ask her. Is it going ish away or ish away? Because it looked like it was just sitting there on the water. It'd be so pretty. One day, our house caught on fire, and we just had shingles on the roof, and we had an old wood stove in that big kitchen. And, of course, the pipe went up through those little hole up there in the roof. And I was just a child playing on the floor and looked up, and sparks had come out and had lit the shingles right up there, and they were on fire. So I screamed and showed them where the fire was. So my brother got the ladder and put it up against the house, and my sisters made a bucket brigade from the pump. And they'd take the bucket to him, and somebody would take it up the ladder from him on up there because there were so many of us. And they put it out. But if someone hadn't seen it and it had gotten out of hand, it didn't cause much damage. And my brother was able to fix it because he was, say, about 12 years old. When I was three, he was already 15.
Mm-hmm.
So because he was 12 years older than I was, so he could do just about anything my daddy could do as far. In fact, he might could have done more because my daddy wasn't much of a handyman. My mother could do better about building things than my daddy. He wasn't turned to be a handyman, but he did his part in other ways.
Yeah. Did your parents both grow up around Jacksonville?
Well, over in, my mother grew up in Sanderson, around Sanderson, Florida, and my daddy in that same area. My daddy taught music in high school.
Oh, yeah.
And singing in high school. And my mother, then you didn't have to go to college to teach in high school. And he didn't go to college, and neither did my mother. But as soon as she got out of high school, she started as a substitute teacher with her friend of hers was teaching a class in the grammar school there. So my mother taught for a year as her substitute. And so that's how they met.
Mm-hmm.
And they had quite a courtship. That was a lot of fun to hear my mother tell about that. But the one thing that was so interesting is that the day they were to get married, he was to bring the person with him in the buggy, because this was 1905, no cars. And she got all dressed. My mother was really beautiful because she had blue eyes and blonde, naturally curly hair. And she got all dressed in everything except she wouldn't put her dress on. So my grandmother said, Lee, why don't you put your dress on and be ready when Rob gets here? And she said, I'm not going to be left waiting. She had a girlfriend that had been left at the church. And the groom never showed up, and she knew how embarrassing that was to that girl. And even though she was having a home wedding, she wasn't going to be all dressed and the family and everything looking at her, and Rob not showing up, see. So my grandmother says, well, if I didn't have any more confidence in him than that, I wouldn't marry him. My mother said, well, she had more confidence in him, and she felt like he'd be there. And the way she lived was a long stretch of road just straight down there. And it would take him about 15 minutes from the time she saw his buggy till it got up to her house, which would give her time to slip on her dress. And she wasn't about to put on that dress till he got up there. Isn't that a funny tale? She was... My mother always had a mind of her own, and she exercised it all her life. She was really something else. She had a strong personality. You've seen that type of people.
Sure, yeah.
But she was a wonderful person, and she used that personality and all to help others, and everybody liked her that knew her, mm-hmm. even her son-in-laws.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's
good. Well, she'll tell you right now. She told me many times that she trusts me more than she would her.
And take your part. She'd take his part because she said the family, her children would get over it and love her anyway, but she wasn't going to get in trouble with her in-laws, so she'd take his part. She was funny.
The home that we've been talking about, that you've been telling me about, were there many neighbors around you there?
Well, there was no neighbors, except you'd have to get in a boat and go from one island to the other to find neighbors. At one time, my uncle, my mother's sister's husband, owned an island, a small island. See, there was plenty of small, or a few small islands between us and the mouth of the St. John, where we went into the St. John's River, mm-hmm. where San Carlos Creek. And I believe that little island now, the one I identify when I'm on Heckscher Drive, has a house on it. Isn't that the one that we claim was Uncle Charlie's island?
That's what she told me.
That's the one I think. As you are coming into town, you can see the house because it's near the water's edge.
But in years past, there was a fish camp down there.
But when Uncle Charlie had it, it was just a little, he just had a little house on it. It wasn't much of a house. Because he at that time, his wife was out in Salt Lake, and he lived there sort of batching it. And he didn't have much of a house. But he was a carpenter, so he could build whatever he wanted to build and live in. But at one time, he bought that island. Now, I don't, and that's when we lived down there. Now, when he sold the island, I don't know.
Yeah. Mr. McCrae just reminded me of something I meant to ask you about fish camps, which you were mentioning before mm-hmm. we started the interview here tonight. Do you always remember fish camps being around there, or was there a time when people started to build them and establish them along the river?
When we lived down there, there wasn't any fish camps.
I'll tell you why, there wasn't no Heckscher Drive.
Mm-hmm. It was too difficult to get down in there.
Yeah,
the offshore corporation, I believe it was. Did she mention that?
No.
That purchased the land from Daddy?
Well, they bought all that land and then built this road down there. An offshore corporation.
Hmm.
And then they started putting in the fish camps and all that.
Oh, yeah.
But see, there was no place for fish camps because there was no roads that people could get down in there to them mm-hmm. at that time. And there was no bridges like now when you go Heckscher Drive, you just take it for granted. You drive across those bridges all the way down to Fort George Inlet. But at that time, you couldn't. You had to go everywhere by boat through in there then. And there was no, even down all the way down to the inland waterway, you know where that is now.
Fort George Inlet.
Yeah, well, it's...
Sisters Creek.
Mm-hmm.
That's the inlet.
But there was no way to get down in there at all. And to my knowledge, I don't believe the jetties were built at that time, but I wouldn't say that they weren't for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think they were.
They were?
They put those there, put it out so their ships.
I guess when they dredged out that river
mm-hmm.
channel, they put the jetties
that
there, I guess.
That would have been a big project.
I imagine so.
You've seen the side of
yes.
the rock.
Yeah.
They had the companies all the way up.
Yeah.
We don't have them.
But, of course, there was no Mayport as we know it now. You could go down there and fish, but you'd have to go down in a boat. And Daddy didn't have motors. We just had several rowboats.
Mm-hmm.
And so we stayed pretty close to home to do our fishing.
An article about Mayport the other day.
Well, someone wrote that about the work that I'm doing and about one of the people I was interviewing down there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, I can remember whoever it is mentioned before the naval base there.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken her out down there. She loves raw oysters.
Yeah.
They used to be, all that whole place, man, it used to be bountiful. Oyster beds.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken her out on Sunday afternoon with a screwdriver and just feed her. On low tide, we just get out on the oyster bed.
Then it was before it was polluted. See,
yeah,
there was no pollution in the water then.
Well, the thing about it, they didn't know it.
Well, it wasn't. I don't believe that it was.
Well, not like it.
Because then there wasn't many people in Jacksonville.
Yeah,
like, well, there wasn't the industry and all like we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And life was slower and easier.
Did people who lived near where you did or along the river, did they get together for dances or any other kinds of entertainment?
Yes, my sister was telling me about Mr. and Ms. Kemp and all their family came over to our place because, see, we had such a good fishing place. Now, right where our house sat and right in front of our house was the dock, but the creek turned. And then it turned back. Well, when it turned back was a place we call the landing. Now, not the landing I mentioned to you. It's a high clay landing. That's way on through the woods. But this was just in walking distance of the house. Was just not very far down there. And that's where we had our picnics. And Daddy had friends that would come out and Mama. And they would camp there overnight. Of course, it would just be crude camping back then. Campers didn't have the supplies to camp with that they had now. But they would stay down there overnight. Sometimes they would stay in our house if we had space. But they would come down there and we'd have parties. And I remember that one time they had a party, and when they left, we found a little doll bed, a little blue tin doll bed. Couldn't have been 4 inches long, but we just didn't get kids in the country. All our toys were made. And I just thought that was the most beautiful thing. So Mama made me a little tiny cloth doll to lay in that little 4-inch doll bed. Oh, that was really a prize to have that little doll bed. And that's how I got it. The people that had been camping down there with their children took it back. And they left that, so I got that. But yes, we had parties there at our house. And then, like I say, we'd have camping parties and fishing parties. So my mother and father loved to entertain, but we just entertained simply with what we had. We weren't able to hire or go out and anything. We would just live on the land and what we had there. But it was really a wonderful life because you had almost everything you needed right there to eat. Of course, we didn't have staples. Mm-hmm. That's why she went to town to buy that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But just everything else we had. And I remember my sisters were old enough to have boyfriends. See, by the time I got 5, they were 15 and 16, and my brother, you know. And my oldest sister, Ethel, we all call her sister. To this day, she's known as sister to us. And she had a date with some boy, and, of course, we all went, and she took me. And I remember that we all were in the back of the wagon. We went in a wagon. And when we got to this party, it was kind of a square dance in some of the neighbors' home, but it was back, it wasn't on the water, it was back in the community back of us on that road with those deep ditches, not ditches, but ruts.
Yeah.
And I wasn't there any time till I was sleepy, being a small child. So I remember she wrapped me up in the quilt that she had brought and laid me on the lady's bed, and I went on off to sleep. But how many girls would take their baby sister on a date with them or to a party like that?
I tell you,
not many.
One of the outcomes of that was when her sister got married, she wanted to go on a honeymoon. And brought a fit, fell right down in front of the car and laid in the road and kicked her heels.
I'm going to tell that right now, what it was. My sister had a church wedding, and in those days they tied tin cans and anything that would rattle, you know, on the back of a car and put just married and all these signs on it. And they would, the bride and groom would drive all over town, up downtown and around, and the friends would ride behind them and blow the horns and just make a lot of noise,
right.
You know, to tease them and aggravate them. And so when they left the church, I asked Sister if I could, I knew they were going to do that because they had all that tied on, and I asked her if I could ride with her, and she said, sure, she didn't care. And so she asked him, and he said, absolutely not. And I got so mad at him. Oh, and I had on my pretty little dress I'd worn to that wedding, and I sat right down, I remember, in deep ruts and just cried and
that
kicked it.
After they moved to town.
Yeah, we'd moved back to town then. I was 10. And if my mother had seen me, she would really got me. But she was so busy getting things ready for the wedding dinner and all that she didn't see me. But if she had, but that about the first and only real tantrum I ever had. But I wasn't going on the honeymoon. I didn't see any reason why I couldn't sit in that seat and ride around while they were doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And she would have let me, but he wouldn't.
Let me just check.
End of side two of tape one of the July 30th, 1986 interview with Camilla Mickey McRae. Interview continued on side one of tape two.